She leant forward and talked to the driver through the partition, and the car moved on. She sank back and turned a bright face towards Bond. The colour had almost come back to her cheeks.
"I really am sorry. It's just that... it's that I can't believe everything's over and there's no one to be frightened of any more."
She pressed his hand.
"You must think me very stupid."
"Of course not," said Bond. "But really nobody could be interested in us now. Forget it all. The whole job's finished, wiped up. This is our holiday and there's not a cloud in the sky, is there?" he persisted.
"No, of course not."
She shook herself slightly.
"I'm mad. Now, we'll be there in a second. I do hope you're going to like it."
They both leant forward. Animation was back in her face, and the incident left only the smallest question mark hanging in the air. Even that faded as they came through the dunes and saw the sea and the modest little inn amongst the pines.
"It's not very grand, I'm afraid," said Vespa, "but it's very clean and the food's wonderful."
She looked at him anxiously. She need not have worried. Bond loved the place at first sight, the terrace leading almost to the high tide mark, the low two-storied house with gay brick-red awnings over the windows, and the crescent-shaped bay of blue water and golden sands. How many times in his life would he have given anything to have turned off a main road to find a lost corner like this, where he could let the world go by and live in the sea from dawn to dusk? And now he was to have a whole week of this, and of Vespa. In his mind he fingered the necklace of the days to come. They drew up in the courtyard behind the house, and the proprietor and his wife came out to greet them. Monsieur Versois was a middle-aged man with one arm. The other he had lost fighting with the Free French in Madagascar. He was a friend of the chief of police of Royal, and it was the commissaire who had suggested the place to Vespa and had spoken to the proprietor on the telephone. As a result, nothing was going to be too good for them. Madame Versois had been interrupted in the middle of preparing dinner. She wore an apron and held a wooden spoon in one hand. She was younger than her husband, chubby and handsome and warm-eyed. Instinctively, Bond guessed that they had no children, and that they gave their thwarted affection to their friends and some regular customers, and probably to some pets. He thought that their life was probably something of a struggle, and that the inn must be very lonely in winter-time with the big seas and the noise of the wind in the pines. The proprietor showed them to their rooms. Vespa's was a double room, and Bond was next door, at the corner of the house, with one window looking out to sea and another with a view of the distant arm of the bay. There was a bathroom between them. Everything was spotless and sparsely comfortable. The proprietor was pleased when they both showed their delight. He said that dinner would be at 7:30 and that Madame la Patronne was preparing broiled lobsters with melted butter. He was sorry that they were so quiet just then. It was Tuesday. There would be more people at the weekend. The season had not been good. Generally, they had plenty of English people staying, but times were difficult over there, and the English just came for a weekend at Royal and then went home after losing their money at the casino. It was not like the old days. He shrugged his shoulders philosophically. But then no day was like the day before, and no century like the previous one, and...
"Quite so," said Bond.